Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Down with the 90s. I'm Jerry Strauss, and this is your look at some of our favorite stars from the world of TV, of film, of music, and anything else that you can think of and remember fondly from back in our time, the 1990s. Today, we've got a really great guest on the line, someone who played one of the more memorable and beloved roles in TV comedy during that time period, as we look back to one of the really more memorable sitcoms of all time in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And we are talking with the artist formerly known as Hilary Banks, Karen Parsons. Thanks for joining us today on Down with the 90s.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No problem. Karen, so much to talk about with you. And, you know, it's just amazing to think about that character and the show's impact overall and how fondly it's remembered. Before we even get back to your beginnings, I just want to ask you, did you guys really think, because it's hard to tell when things are actually on television and things are actually being put out there and absorbed, it's hard to tell or to know what will stand the test of time. Did you think that you'd still be answering probably so many questions about your time as Hilary Banks
in
2013?
No. Excuse me. It was so much of an in-the-moment experience, but we really were having such a good time and enjoying each other so much that I think everything that came, this huge wake, you know, this long, lasting, like, generations that are enjoying the show, I was, for me, completely unexpected.
Wow, what an experience it must have been, and apparently still is, and probably always will be for you. But let's go back to the beginning quickly, just to understand how you got to that point. So you were born out in California. At what point did you direct yourself towards acting as what would be your life?
Well, believe it or not, I was one of those kids who at 6 years old said, I want to act, and I didn't stop saying it. I checked books out of the library that had compilations of plays, and I would go through all the parts, and there was a bookmobile at our school, and I got a book called Small Plays for You and a Friend, and it had props, and it was a little tiny, little teeny paperback, brightly colored little book, and I just got very excited about trying to put these plays on. It was just me playing the parts, and I just loved it. And then by the time I was 13, and I got into my first real acting workshop, not just a little kiddie class. My friend of mine and I stumbled onto a real adult workshop, and they allowed us to stay in the class even though we were so young. And it was, you know, they were learning Stanislavski and Uta Hagen, and it was very different approach from cute little plays to taking it to another level and taking it very seriously. And I was hooked. I loved it. And so from that moment, I wanted to do it. But of course, I was in school as a kid. I wasn't trying to pursue it then, not until I was older.
But you certainly were given the opportunity and the tools to get interest in that at an early age. Do you credit your parents with being open-minded enough to allow you to explore that early?
I do. I mean, it's an interesting thing because I have a daughter now who's 10, and it's, you know, I have such a different attitude about it. I want to be careful because I don't want to stifle her creative expression or something she might be very serious about. But the world is very different now, too, than it was when I was that age, because now the focus is so much on fame and results, you know, like, how do people take you? Are you famous? And being famous for no real reason, you know, just for fame's sake, not about the love or the joy of craft, something you worked hard at or that you, you know, there's a true creative expression. And so I have to be careful. My mom was great. She was so supportive of me. She went to all my recitals and took me to my, I didn't appreciate it until I was a mother that I realized, gosh, she took me to all those workshops, and I guess she paid for them, you know. And yeah. She was paying for these workshops and took me to everything. And then when I was on Fresh Prince, she was there every single week. She went to every taping. And, you know, she was so supportive of me all the time and never pushy, not one bit. It was never about her. It was always just following what I was into. And I look at that now, and I really, really give her credit for that. And, you know, she also somewhere along the line did something right so that I didn't end up, you know, I've had my my own teenage failings, as many of us have, but I was fortunate enough not to have any kind of crazy, scandalous, you know, teenage acting-related behaviors or star-related or whatever behavior that we
right.
see so many young people now that are in the industry. I mean, I was a little bit older than a lot of the kids that we're seeing, you know, have these kind of explosions in front of us.
Right.
But, you know. It's hard, though, you know, because I think we all do crazy stuff when we're in our teens, and to have cameras watching you every step of the way, God, I'm, you know, it'd be awful if cameras were watching me every step of that way.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, if you think back 20 years ago, you had pictures that would surface a week later in a magazine. Now,
yeah.
if you do something, you're online with video 5 minutes later.
Absolutely. It's crazy. It's incredibly different, situation. And I have no idea how that would affect me if I were the subject, if I were that person. And I don't know what it would be like to grow up in a world where everything was just, you just push a button and it goes out to the world. I don't know if, you know, when you're developing and you're exploring your own power and your own, you know, impulses as a kid, without being able to reel yourself in yet completely. You know,
yeah.
what happens when you have access by just pushing a button on your computer and tweeting something very personal to the whole world? I don't know what that would be like. I can't imagine. I think parents have
it's
to be more
like,
diligent.
It almost sounds like they're on probation, like they're literally being watched and they've got the ankle bracelet or whatever it is.
It's true. I mean, you talk about, I mean, I think we've probably heard that cliche in the past of people saying, oh, you know, like the whole, not saying Marilyn Monroe said this, but that whole Marilyn Monroe era of, oh, she was kind of in a prison because the world was watching her, you know,
mm-hmm.
well, that's nothing compared to, like you say, the kind of prison, I guess, that a lot of these very, very famous people have now, especially when they're really young, because they're being, they have people waiting outside their house to take their pictures, and if anyone takes their picture, they post it immediately, no matter what they're doing or look like or who they're kissing, whatever.
Sure.
You know, it's very, you really lack, you really don't have any, you have very little privacy, and I don't envy that. I certainly don't envy that.
And we won't sell your experiences short either, because still you were, even at that point, you were on a very hot television show. You were a very well-recognized and very visible TV star. And let's talk about how you got from point A to point whatever letter that would be
yeah.
in between your classes to getting to that point. Now, it sounds to me like in the early going, your aspirations were very artistic, and
yeah.
you were very serious about the craft of acting.
Yeah.
So where did that take you from?
How did I end up on a half-hour sitcom acting like a snot? You know, I that's out there. I remember I went to my acting coach with two auditions that I had that I wanted to work with him on. And one of them was for a film, a very dramatic role. And I was going on callbacks for both. And it was very dramatic. It was a drug addict, and she was a wreck, and, you know, all this, like, oh, heavy, acting stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, I have to work on this. When I went to see him, I said, I really have to work on this. And we worked on it. And then at the end of the session, he said, but on the phone, you said you had two things that you were auditioning for. I said, oh, yeah, the other thing's a stupid sitcom. No. Come here. Give it to me. He said, you treat everything the same way. You treat everything right. Exactly the same way. You give it everything you have. I'm like, okay. You know, so I handed it to him. We worked on it. And that was the Fresh Prince. And you know what's really ironic? You know what's really ironic? Is that coach, that acting coach, is now Will Smith's personal coach who goes with him everywhere.
Really?
And that hit me by complete surprise. A few years ago, I went to see 7 Pounds, to see a little private screening of 7 Pounds that Will had organized. And I heard them calling this acting coach was inside waiting to see Will. And I couldn't believe it. I hadn't seen him in years. It's now his coach. But anyway, this is bizarre. I said, do you have any idea? Did you know that I've known this guy since I got the show? That's, you know, but, so I think I was very serious and everything, but I got Fresh Prince, and it turned out to be not some stupid sitcom. It turned out to be an experience of a lifetime, and I had, you know, an incredible time, and I loved every minute of it, and it lasted for 6 years.
Did you have reservations when you got to the point of auditioning and they're interested in you being part of the show and this is really something that you're possibly going to do? Did you have second thoughts before you decided to go ahead with it?
Oh yeah, that whole like, oh my gosh, am I going to really burden myself with being on a sitcom? No. Are you kidding me? I was so excited with every callback. I never felt like that about it. I didn't feel snobby about it. I think I just, when I had that to work on it, I hadn't thought about putting the same kind of work into it, which was really, you know, it was a lesson I learned. But I didn't not enjoy the experience and the kind of going through it when I was auditioning. It was fun and they were laughing and they were, you know, getting the joke that I was getting. And I had to audition for Quincy Jones, who, you know, slaps the table and throws his head back when he laughs, you know. So I was so, you know, oh, my God, I'm auditioning for Quincy Jones. I can't believe it. And then to have him laughing hysterically was just like, this is insane. Like, I don't know where I am. I'm on the moon. But
I mean, there was a lot. I remember, you know, once it got to the point of, let's promote the show, it's debuting, it's coming. I remember that. That was a really heavily hyped show because Will Smith was just a really popular name already for music. And
right.
I mean, there had to be a lot of excitement and anticipation about just how big this thing could get. Did you, inevitably, were you surprised at how quickly it got so popular?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't experience that sort of popularity while we were on the show. To be perfectly honest, because I do remember Will saying to us once, we were all hanging out, I think we were at the mall, I'm not sure, but we were all out once, and Will said, because he had already experienced quite a lot of fame, and he said, the first thing that you're going to find out is you can't go to the mall. And I was like, ha! And I kind of laughed it off. And it's true, one of the places, you know, that I found when the show started to really hit that you felt very conspicuous was in the mall. You know, you're in this closed in a certain demographic that's in the mall and who will recognize you and will point you out right away.
Yeah.
The thing is, this show really, it took a while for the show. It wasn't until we were in syndication, we were in reruns, that the show started to really catch on. And that was, I think, 3 years into the show. And then, even then, it wasn't until the show was off the air, after the 6 years were up, that I started to really get people coming up to me a lot. That didn't happen until then. So while we were actually shooting the show, I didn't experience that, just kind of the same intense stuff. It's
wow.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you were going to the right places, because I think...
Well, maybe part of it was I was living in Los Angeles. Maybe it was part of it, you know, you go out and people don't say anything to you. Because, you know...
Yeah, you went out and, like, hang out in Philly, find out what will happen then. Even now, forget about it.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I just were seeing, you know, there are a lot of people on TV shows and films and, you know, musicians in that area, out there. So maybe I was hanging out in some of the same places. So they're like, big deal.
maybe they're just really used to everything. It's like,
Maybe.
So you had your great stint there. And I mean, you, and I noticed this, I was just looking at your history online. There were a couple times where they pulled you and your character onto a couple, like, other NBC sitcoms. Like, there was, I think, Out All Night, which was a show I actually enjoyed a great deal at the time.
Yeah.
That did not last very long.
It was Vivica Fox and Dwayne Martin and Patti LaBelle.
Yeah.
And Morris Chestnut.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. It was I thought it was a funny show. And you also did, like, a thing on Blossom, I think it was. But what struck me about that is that, okay, like, this is one of, you know, people talk about Will's character, of course, but your character may have been, in some ways, the most defining, most distinct character that people really loved from that show, to the point that they used it to try and spike a little bit of interest or ratings in other shows. And a lot of that credit, I think, has to go to you creating probably the broadest character on the show, maybe the most out there in one direction, but also humanizing the character so that people actually cared about Hillary.
Oh, you're nice. Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice to say. I know when we first did it, I remember there was some event that we were going to have to go back after the show had already premiered. We were going to have to go back to Philadelphia for something that Will was doing. And I was really nervous about going because I was afraid that everyone would hate me. You know, they would have all seen the show and they'd all hate me, booing me because of, you know, who the character was. And it was very nice. For the most part, she was a character people loved, kind of thing, so it wasn't so bad. I did do an episode, one of the early episodes, the first season, where Will and Carlton blackmail me for dropping out of college.
Okay.
And on that episode, Will blackmails me, and Carlton finds out and decides he's going to do the same thing. And so he said, I go to him for help, and I said, because we shot in front of the live audience, and I went to Carlton, and I said, you know, he's making me clean his dirty, you know, dirty drawers, and he's making me do this. And he turns on me, and he says, will you clean mine? And when he did, because I went to him for help, and then he turns and he goes,
right,
will you clean mine? And when he did that, the audience, I'm not kidding, they did not just clap, they did not just yell, they were stomping in the stands. Stomping their feet. I couldn't believe it. If you watch the episode, you can see me start smiling because I have to hold it for so long through their stomping.
Right.
I was in shock. I was like, oh my God, they really hate me. They're stomping their feet. They're so happy that he's going against me. It was funny. But it was fun.
Yeah, that was just, I mean, and I don't know how often that's really done anymore as far as, the taping in front of a live studio audience. Was that a pretty constant thing for your show? Was that almost always the case that it was done live?
Oh, yeah, every Friday. Yeah, we rehearsed all week. Thursday, we sometimes did our blocking on Thursday in front of the camera, and sometimes they picked up a few little things that they thought they might not be able to get in front of the audience. But my friends who worked in the editing of the show said that stuff they never used the Thursday stuff. I said, it doesn't match. Because Fridays, all of your energy was, all of you guys, your energy was so much higher when you were in front of the live audience that it didn't match. So we couldn't even use Thursday. So.
Right.
Because everyone got so, you know, jacked up in front of the audience, especially Will and Alfonso. Forget it.
Yeah, definitely. It has to be kind of a wild scene every week then, because, I mean...
It was fun. And we had lots of people come visit the set all the time. People would say, your set is so fun. You don't know what you have. It's so great here. And I kept saying, oh, yeah, it's great. I know. I knew it was great. But I guess I kind of knew what I had, but I didn't realize that most places don't have it like that. That it wasn't...
Right.
You know, where you could show up on our set and somebody's hugged up on somebody because we just were all crazy about each other. We were all always laughing and having fun and hugging and just, we were family right away. We were very lucky people. Really lucky. Still are.
Yeah, and it seems like you guys still, like, are involved, and we're going to talk about your organization in just a few minutes, but I know that Tatiana she's on the board of your organization, right?
Yeah, she is. Yep.
I've seen over the course of time reunions and get-togethers and different events that various combinations of you have all been a part of, so it seems like you actually want to talk to each other, which is
I think we'd all like to see a lot more of each other. You know, it's kind of frustrating. I mean, for me it was devastating in the beginning, I have to admit, because I grew up with no brothers or sisters, and I went into this situation and I immediately had such a big family, and Tatiana really became like a sister to me, and Alfonso really became like my brother, and Will and I really became close friends, a cousin, and it was, and you know, James Avery still says he's my dad, you know, and it was very difficult when the show first ended to not have, after 6 years, and then whatever extracurricular things, press events you do together, you don't realize how much, you take it for granted a little bit. It's hard not to. Take it for granted a little bit that you see these people every day and suddenly not be seeing them anymore. It was hard adjustment for me.
I've got to ask you this. I was just thinking about this the other day. Sitcoms, 9 times out of 10, if there is somebody pining after somebody else, no matter how goofy that matchup might hypothetically be, eventually they get together. With that being said, on your show, you had DJ Jazzy Jeff's character after you pretty much the entire length of the show, and it never happened, which I think was the way to go. But, I mean, do you feel that is there any sort of lingering disappointment that Hillary and Jazz never had their moment in the sun?
No, I mean, I never saw that as hey, maybe one day they will. I never felt like there was some straight. She never had much of a moment with him. You know, he was kicked out of the house so fast as soon as he like toward me, he was like out, turned around and had to be kicked out the back door. So, there was not much time for any connection, I guess. That's funny, though. That would have been good for the two of them to run off into the sunset together at the end.
I always preferred the storyline that you had with Trevor. and that was actually something that I thought like added more depth to your character and gave a little sympathy to your character where maybe there wasn't quite as much before. And pretty dark humor the way that situation ended, but
no kidding, man, that just shocked everybody for a couple reasons. One, because I think everyone was surprised that Brian Stokes Mitchell was being killed off the show because he was great, and he's such a great guy. I mean, now he's like a multi-Tony Award-winning Broadway performer and actor, and which is great. He's a star. But it was really fun to work with him, and he was very funny. And to show up that new season, I think I was one of the first show back of the new season, and to get to find out by reading the script that Trevor's no longer with us, and then how he met his demise, we all went, whoa! You know, and then the sound people had their fun with the sound effects for the bungee jump. They kept trying different sound effects to watch our expressions as we looked at the TV and saw it happening. So, you know, they were doing all kinds of craziness back there. But it was fun. It was crazy. I'm sorry I didn't get to work with Brian anymore, but it was a funny episode.
It was, I mean, you know, yeah, it was regrettable, but comedically it was definitely one.
Yeah, I know. Everybody loves that episode. I was like, well, I'm glad it worked out well, because if that show had bombed, would have gone out there on a limb, quite literally, and just that would have been a drag. But at least it left its mark.
Oh man! So Fresh Prince, of course, was such a ride for you. And then, I'm not very knowledgeable about this, but I know that in 1996, you actually were very involved with you. Co-created, co-produced, co-starred in a sitcom called Lush Life.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that, because that sounds like that was a really big move for you to go from being, you know, mainly just talent and really putting yourself into this project.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. My friend Lori Petty, who's, you know, she's an actress, and she had just done Tank Girl, the film Tank Girl, and she's done lots of films and TV. We've been friends for a long time. And so we had said, you know, we had come up with an idea we thought was really fun and interesting. And we started writing it down on napkins, cocktail napkins. And we finally put it together properly. And I approached Yvette Bowser. What?
I was going to say, by the way, all great ideas are first written on cocktail napkins, not just because they're convenient, but because it means that you're drinking at the time. So
there you go. Exactly. But I approached Yvette Lee Bowser, who created Living Single, and Yvette had actually, she came up to me before and said, when the show's over, I want to do something with you. Yvette and I went to high school together. She created Living Single with Queen Latifah and the gang. And I said, I would love it. And so then, you know, Lori and I had started developing this little idea. And I said, you know, we should take this to Yvette. So we did. And they met. And we all hit it off together and put the show together for Fox. And it was a short-lived little romp, but it was very educational. For me, not for the audience, but for me, I learned a lot. I think there are about 5 Oprah Winfreys, maybe 10. I don't think there's one single person. From what I learned producing a show and being on the show and, you know, writing, I don't think there's just one Oprah Winfrey. I think that's a lie.
There's some sort of an underground cave with the spawn of Oprah Winfrey.
There's a bunch of Oprahs. Because
it's like the Fraggles, like Fraggle Rock.
Is that what Fraggle Rock is?
But it's all Oprah.
Oh. See, I hardly had a moment to breathe. You know, I had so much to do. And it was very interesting. Not that it's an experience I wouldn't have again. I would go into it very differently. I didn't have a different understanding. But, yeah, it was funny. We completed Fresh Prince in 1996. That summer, I went to NYU and went to their film intensive workshop. And and then from there, I mean, the second day of the intensive, found out we were picked up. The show Lori and I had shot, pilot we shot, was picked up. Continued the intensive in a kind of blissful state, because I knew that when it was over, I was going to the show. And then we did the show, and it was great. But then the head of the network left, and when that happened, was replaced, and when that happened, we all said a prayer, because we know what happens when one person is out, they usually get rid of all the new stuff, and
right.
All the new comedies went.
Well,
it was okay.
It was great.
But it was like I said, I learned a lot. It was a good experience, and I'd go for something like that again. I could do it differently, but I'd do it.
Well, let's talk about something that you're currently involved in that's very different from all this, and that's Sweet Blackberry. And that's this is a nonprofit organization, correct?
That's right.
And your entire focus for this is to bring lesser known stories from Black history to the community, to children, to people who don't really have access necessarily to hearing some of these stories.
That's right. I mean, I think we learn a handful of stories in school about Black history that are incredible stories of incredible people, but there are so many more. There's just, you know, a wealth of it's just part of American history. It's not this little boutique history, this Black history thing. It's what's been relegated to this little boutique history, which is not the truth. The truth is there's just so many stories to be told that are important, and they are important to all of us as parts of American history. And I think there are a few dangerous things by not telling them. Number one, we missed the opportunity to teach our kids these things in history and how people overcame incredible obstacles to get there, and how you can, through your own determination, you can make things happen. But also, we teach kids subliminally. I think we're sending this message that, oh, every once in a while, a special Black person comes along and does something. Isn't that great? And that's a really dangerous message.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's so the other way. Black people are really are so much a part of the fabric of this country and the building of it, which makes sense if you think about slavery. And, of course, people were literally doing the building of a lot of things and didn't have the resources or the access to a lot of things, and had to teach themselves engineering and craftsmanship and how to create, build something. And I need something to go in here. I'm going to invent this. I mean, so it makes a lot of sense that so many inventors and so much history is out there that we're Black Americans, we just don't hear about. So I just think we need to get these stories into your young mind, get them early, plant some seeds, and they'll grow up wanting to know more and investigate further.
So when and how did this start for you? I mean, is this something that you've been planning or thinking about on some level for a long time, or where did this come from to actually start up this?
It actually, when I was shooting Fresh Prince, my mother was a librarian at the time at the largest Black resource center that had the largest Black resource center in California, in South Central Los Angeles. And she'd call me from time to time and tell me some stuff, stories that she came across that she found interesting. And she told me the story of Henry Box Brown one day. The true story of a slave who mailed himself to freedom in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, this is a remarkable story, and I can't believe I never heard it. Talked to my friends. My friends had never heard it. And so I wrote notes saying, I'm going to make a book for kids out of this. This is such an obvious story for kids. And then I had other ideas that I wanted to do. And then I'd forget about it, go hang out. Go drinking and being fabulous on TV.
And writing ideas on cocktail napkins.
Cocktail napkins. Not writing Sweet Blackberry notes, writing other things. And, and so it wasn't until I was pregnant with my first child, my daughter, that I started to get more serious about it, talk about it a lot. And my husband, my husband, Alex, is a filmmaker. He's an independent filmmaker. So he doesn't wait around. And he just, when he wants to do something, he tries to get it done right then and there. And so he said, you need to stop talking so much and do this. So I took that nudge and started talking to people about how I could, how they could help me and how I could get this done, and started getting these movies out to kids. So our first one was The Journey of Henry Box Brown, and it was narrated by Alfred Woodard. And the second one was Garrett's Gift, the story of Garrett Morgan, the inventor, invented the traffic signal, and that was narrated by Queen Latifah.
Wow. So what has the process been like? I mean, obviously you've got a lot of connections and friends of friends in show business. So you have some access to names like those you've just mentioned. But how easy or how tough has it been to sort of get these people involved and really round up this all-star cast? Because it seems like you've got that level of name and that level of star power in everything you've put out.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it's an interesting and a really good question, because it doesn't translate necessarily into funding. You know, we are a nonprofit, and all that goodwill, people are very excited about Sweet Blackberry, but it's hard. It is very difficult to you know, fundraising is a real, you know, you got to really get out there and fundraise and ask people for help. And everyone kept saying, don't make it a nonprofit. Do what's work. And I get it. And it's crazy. It's really, it takes a lot. I believe in it so much. And the feedback has been so tremendous. You know, we've received awards, like effortlessly received some very prestigious awards that just let me know that we were on the right path. And I see the way kids respond to the films. I've sat with so many audiences, and it's so encouraging and exciting. So I know it's all good and it's all right. It's just trying to get everybody and harness all that goodwill into the kind of support that we need. And so I've done some of that, and I'll have to continue. It's a lot of work, though. But it's a good cause. I'm excited about the mission of the organization. And, I know it means a lot to a lot of people, because I have a little bit of a social media presence happening, and it's nice to get feedback directly from people about how much it means to them.
You know, and I think a lot of people probably don't realize, and you're certainly one who can speak about it, this animated programming. Mm-hmm. How painstakingly long does it take? What is the process of just getting these things made? Because, I mean, even the simplest sort of animation, to my understanding, is a hell of a process.
Yeah, it's not some little quick thing. I know it's interesting that you know that. A lot more goes into it. You know, there's writers conceiving it, the stories, there's writing the stories, and there's the art direction and the storyboarding and, you know, historically getting things right and finding the illustrator that's actually, let's do the illustrations and then all of the different pieces that have to move within it, because our stories are more like, they're more like animatic. They're more like a picture book come to life than a full-on mm-hmm. cartoon. And,
right.
You know, but all the same, it's still a lot of images have to be pulled out. A lot of different body parts have to be drawn separately, and so that everything can move and twirl and spin and create whatever it is you're trying to convey within the story. And it's a lot. And then there's all the sound design and music, and it's intricate. It's intricate. Yeah, when it all comes together, I can't tell you the feeling when you see it all completed, you know.
Yeah, it's just great. That whole process. I mean, for someone working from a non-profit fundraising perspective, it's got to be a battle to fight the inherent expenses of just creating that type of product to get it.
It's hard. It's hard. That part is, I don't think it ever gets any easier from what I understand. It's always, that's always a pretty tough one. But like I said, I
like being a parent.
Time. Like being a parent. This is my kid.
Yeah. It never ends.
No, exactly. It's true. It's true.
So, so these products, I know they're available on DVD through the website, which is sweetblackberry.org. You've also had programming on HBO, correct?
Yeah, we had a nice run on HBO. Well, they're not currently on HBO. They were for a while. That was really fun. They got to, like, a, you know, the whole thing I want is them to get out to the kids. So we had, it was nice because they were able to go right out into the living rooms. And that was really nice. But yeah, we had a nice run on HBO, and you know, hopefully we're working right now. We're not working directly on another film exactly. We're working on a program right now, and so our big focus is on this program, which will develop a film from it. But it's a mentoring program, and so we're working on that right now. And there'll be information on the website about that pretty soon. It's working with older kids. Mentoring
it. Ah. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's interesting because to hear you describe just some of the stories that you can see on these DVDs and educate your kids and educate yourself about, it strikes me how hot, you know, superheroes are. Kids love superheroes. That's the huge thing right now in entertainment in general. I mean, these are real superhero stories. It's the same appeal, it's the same battle against the odds, and I think that if presented in the right light, this kind of thing is something that families can share together and kids really can sink their teeth into and get interested in all on their own.
Exactly, and that was so much of what interested me in doing it, because I didn't like history as a kid. Honestly, hated it. It was so serious, and I would memorize these dates, and this is very important, and all of a sudden everyone was very serious. And I thought, God, you know, if you could just bring this to kids, I know everything there is to know about Little Red Riding Hood. I know her story like the back of my hand. If you could bring these stories to kids, you know, in an engaging and fun way, the way fairy tales are, like you're saying, superhero stories are brought to them, why not? Because they really are fascinating stories. So bring them to them like that, and they'll know, they'll want to eat them up. You know, it doesn't have to be dry castor oil telling of, you know, important events. You know, it can be closer to something that they can relate to or get excited by.
Sure. Yes, it's an amazing. It's an amazing series of products. It's an amazing organization. You're doing amazing things. And well, let's tell people, you said that you've got your social media presence at full blast. So let's let people know, how can people follow
we can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Facebook. Sweet Blackberry is there on Facebook, and I'm there as well, Karen Parsons. And then we're also on Twitter. We were having some problems with our Twitter account. I have to check today and see how we're doing. But we're also at Twitter and Karen Parsons. Karen, K-A-R-Y-N _ Parsons is also on Twitter. So, yeah. And then, like you said, there's a website, www.sweetblackberry.org, for more information about us and what we're doing.
Awesome. One more question for you, Karen.
What?
Is there a chance at any point in the future that we can expect to see you back on our TV screens?
Oh, I don't know. I hope so. I hope so. I've been, I hope so. Fingers crossed. I've been in development on something, so we'll see, knock wood, if that happens. Hopefully that will come through, because it would be really fun. It would be really good. I don't know if it would be Fresh Prince fun, but it would be really fun.
I'm sure it'll be fun for all of us to watch, and it's going to be fun for all of us to follow you on social media so we can get the inside scoop on that. But for now, TBD. But just want to thank you so much for being part of the show, taking us through your you're everything. Everything you've done, it's amazing, and what you're doing now is amazing as well. So, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me. This was fun.
Oh, cool, cool. All right, Karen, thank you. And folks, thank you for listening. Once again, Down with the 90s, I'm Jerry Strauss. We will see you next time.